So, my mom, who is on the WhatsApp group for the Chabura, sent me a text that an hour ago saying "Welcome home," that she's excited that we're back to where we started. So, Baruch Hashem, it's good to be back. It's a little bit more breezy than the dining room, but God willing, one day we'll be there as well. I had an amazing chabura planned on Shabbos morning. It's like rare that happens, that I'm like, good to go, done. I was going to do the makoros on Motzei Shabbos and like call it a day. And then on Motzei Shabbos, I heard that Rabbi Sachs was nifter. And I felt that for the entire week, most of the Torah that I taught, I felt had to be from Rabbi Sachs. So I completely switched gears on the chabura. What's amazing, though, is I did buy this book not that long ago, and my mother-in-law said to me, she's like, I'm buying you the new Rabbi Sachs book, and I was like, no, I got it, and I was like, if you want, you can have it, because I started with it, and it like, didn't do it for me. So I was like a little bit like, beat up on that, because this will be his last book, but his daughter gave a hesped. I don't know if anybody listened to any of the hespedim. But his daughter, Gila, gave a hesped where she quoted from Vayera of last week. And she said that her father was a special man. And he had the ability to, like, get, they would sit in the kitchen or stand in the kitchen making, food or whatever. And his question to her would be, like, how do we make the world a better place? How do we change, this political issue or whatever? And she was like, my father was a special man, and what he really did was he gave every one of his children an opportunity to make their own space. And I thought that was a very appropriate message, because I haven't figured out exactly how many chaburas we've had together, but like a rough estimate, some years I rough estimate how many meals we've eaten together. But I think we've had, I would say safely, 550 shiurim together. Just a lot. But I think that the beauty to me of the chabura is that it makes a space for every one of us in learning. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has a chance to say things. For the most part, we accept what most people have to say. And I just thought that was a very appropriate message by Rabbi Sachs. So while I never heard him in person, I barely ever heard him recorded, really most of what I've learned from Rabbi Sachs is the written word. I could safely call him my Rebbe, and I guess by extension I would call him our Rebbe. So may our Rebbe's neshama have an aliyah, Yehi Zichro Baruch. And I did find a good chabura in Parshas Chayesara. So what I want to share with you tonight is the end of the parasha. It's really based on one or two psukim in the middle of the first source, but I think there is a benefit to starting from the beginning. So the psukim tell us, Vayosef Avram Vayikach Yishau Shma Keturah. Where is Avram up to? At this point in the parasha, Sarah has died, which is a really rough blow to Avraham. Why? That will be the chabura next year, by Rabbi Grummet. But after that, Avram realizes, wait a second, Yitzhak is not married. Like, we're not in a good place. So we spend most of the parasha trying to ensure that Yitzhak gets married. And after all that's done and Yitzhak gets married, we're told that Avraham remarries and he picks a wife whose name is Keturah. Rashi points out that Keturah is Hagar. And she was called Keturah because Keturah from Ketores, that her ways were sweet like Ketores, not really the picture that we typically have of Hagar. And Vatela lo et Zimran vet Yakshan vet Medan vet Midyan vet Yishbak vet Shuach. And she gives birth to six more children to Avraham. Right? One of the questions I always love to ask my students when I used to teach third grade was, how many kids does Avraham have? And they always tell you two. And you're like, no, you like totally forget the end. He has six more. So there's a lot of children and grandchildren that are born. ובני מדיין איפה ואיפה וחנוך ועבידאה ואלדאה כל אלה בני קטורה. So Keturah has a lot of kids. Vayten Avram et kol asher lo liYitzchak. Avram demonstrates in front of all of them by giving everything to Yitzchak. He says, I want you to understand that Yitzchak is going to be the future of the Jewish people. Even though Avraham, from the perspective of what a far reach he has on mankind, right? He's the father of many, many branches of religion in the world, but specifically the one that matters most to us and to him is the fact that he's the father of Yitzchak, and he makes sure of that by giving everything to Yitzchak. And to the sons of the concubines that Avraham had, he gives gifts. He sends him far, far away. If Yishmael will always be looming large over Yitzchak by being in the area around Israel, these sons go far, far away. And these are the years of Avram's life that he lives, 100 years, 70 years, and 50 years. Right? This is not quite as famous as the beginning, right? At the beginning we know that she's 120 and 7, right? That's something that we all remember. But the psukim use the same at the end to say he's 100, he's 70, and he's 5 years old. Vaygvave yamat Avraham b'seva tova zaken v'saveya v'yasef alamav. So vaygva, he dies, which is a little bit different than vayamat, and Avram lives, Avram dies b'seva tova. A full, complete life. Zaken v'saveya. He is old and full in his years. Vayaseif elamav. And he's collected towards his nation, whatever that means. Possibly it just means that he goes on to the next world. Right? There is a beautiful, beautiful thought at the beginning of the parasha. When we read Rishon on Shabbos, if you look really carefully, Avraham talks about meto milfanav, milfanai, right? The one, the dead body that's right in front of me. And I always found that to be like, it's a crazy idea that Avraham basically, the Aron, is sitting there. He's done the whole funeral, right? Everything is done. And the only problem is that the Chevra Kadisha doesn't have a plot for this body. And then he leaves it there and has a whole conversation with like the Bnei Chait. And the Bnei Chait never say the word milfanai or milfanav. Obviously, I'm not going to say milfanai, but they don't refer it to it that way. It bothers them. There's something that about, they just want to get rid of this body. Not because it's Sarah, not because it's Avram. It's not like there's an anti-Semitic overlay to it. But to these people, to the Bnei Chait, the concept is when you die, you're done. There's nothing beyond this moment, so they're like it's yucky, it's whatever. Just put it in the ground and we'll be done. And Avram says no, like there's nothing to be scared of because death is not the final stop. Death is merely another stop along the journey. And so Vayasef El Amav could possibly be the same thing. What is Avram doing? Avram is going to the next. And then Vayikbru Oto Yitzchak Vishmael Banavel Marat Hamach Pelal Steafrom Ben Sochar Achitir Shopne Mamre. Yitzchak and Yishmael, his son, bury him in Maras Hamach Pelal that belongs to Ephraim Ben Sochar, the Chiti Ashelpne Mamre. And the Psukim, they bookend the Parsha, Hasadesh Arkan Avraham Epine Chait Shamaku Var Avraham Vesarishto. They want to make sure, it's very clear, right, that this is the plot that was bought by Avraham from the Bnei Chait. Avraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. Vahi acharei mot Avraham, after Avraham dies, vayvarech lokim et Yitzchak beno, Yitzchak is blessed, vayishev Yitzchak in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. And Yitzchak stays in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Okay. So I don't have a lot of questions on these psukim, but I have one big one. But before I open my question, so anything that anybody has on these psukim.
Well, I don't think it's not pasuk based, but why didn't Avraham us as Jews, not to take his son's place, of course. He would be the leader, but we have more Jews in the room.
Right. So it's a good question. We did this 1 year. The question was, what's the purpose of this marriage? Right? Like, if Avram wants to know that he's going to have a future, Yitzhak is married, God willing, he's going to have kids. So he can safely assume that Yitzhak will be taken care of. And Yishmael is also busy having kids. And not only that, we're going to see, I mean, if you read the next Aliyah after this, it's the death of Yishmael and all of Yishmael's kids. But Yishmael was already blessed that he was going to be, like, really, like, multiply a lot. So if Avram was worried simply about, like, just having lots of progeny, he's there already. He doesn't need that. So what we suggested, and I can't remember who it was from, was that what Avraham needed to do was have a lot of kids so that it was clear that it wasn't just like Yitzchak is 1A or Yitzchak is 1 and Yishmael is 1A. He wanted to make it clear there's Yitzchak and there is everybody else. So in the multitude of sons, it was much easier to cast away Yishmael and everybody with him. So again, I was never settled with that answer, but I guess that's the best I have. Yeah.
So when Sarah initially has this idea of casting away Yishmael, Abraham is hesitant about it until Hashem comes along and says, you should do this. Listen to your wife. But here he has no problem.
Sending away these kids?
Yeah,
I mean, that would speak to the answer that I just gave, which, again, I don't necessarily love, but if the only purpose of having these kids was to send them away, to make it clear that there's nobody but Yitzchak, so then that's why there's no feelings of guilt here.
Does not sound very
chesedish. Oh, no. That's the famous pasuk is Titen Chesed Lavram. Right? And you look at them and you say, like, really? Like, Yaakov is the paradigm of Emes? Like, I don't know, he lies to his father, steals the brachos, and chesed? I mean, this would be a perfect example of a question on Avram's chesed.
No, at least he gave him matanos. He sent away Yishmael and Hagar with just a thing of water.
Just water, right?
Bread, I love bread.
Yeah, like, good luck.
No money, no gifts, just this.
Right, I hear.
So I always had a problem with Rashi having to tie Keturah to Hagar. Why? What's wrong with Keturah being Keturah? He found somebody else.
So,
because there's no tie to the siblings here. The other children are Yishmael's full siblings.
Correct.
Same father, same mother.
Right.
But there's no connection between them.
Well, if you go with the first answer, he's on the same plane. He's on the same level as all of them. Yishmael and these six other kids.
No, Yishmael
have the same
and Yitzchak
mother,
are the ones that bury Avram.
I know.
Right, these kids are gone.
You raise them away, but if you say they have the same mother and the same father, and these six and Yishmael they're not getting anything. It's all Yitzchak, so it makes sense. It's not 1A, 1B, and then
right.
Everybody else.
Surely's point just strengthens the reason why, if it is Hagar, why Yishmael looks and says, if my six full siblings were sent away, then clearly I'm of no value either. So
I don't know, but Hashem says to Hagar, Yishmael's going to
be... Right, Yishmael will be something.
He's on a different plane than the other six for sure.
Right, so I think the answer to your question is that the Torah, the Medrash, doesn't like unnamed characters. Meaning, if there's no context on who someone is, it bothers the Medrash. So it's easier to say, I don't know who this person is, but we have someone who sounds a lot alike. So, like, let's just package them together. And you see that often where there's, like, Malki Tzedek a couple weeks ago, right? So why does he have to be shame? Why can't he just be Malki Tzedek? Like, and there's two separate people. Because, like, where does Malki Tzedek come from? Like, it's just out of the clear blue sky, this guy comes in. He's in two psukim or so in all of Torah, and then he disappears. So it's easier to say, okay, we have shame. He's like dangling around. He's still alive. We know that based on the years and everything. So, like, let's package it together. I mean, the Medrash does it better by saying that no, you know, her ways were not ketores because since she was banished from Avram's house, she could have, you know, remarried and moved on, but she never was with any men until Avram brought her back. Again, the other piece of it is that Yitzhak goes to Be'er Lachai Roi right before this. So what's he doing in Be'er Lachai Roi? Well, we know Be'er Lachai Roi is a place that Hagar went to daven. So it's just convenient. But it doesn't have to be. And if you're not happy or comfortable with it, there's plenty to sit on and say that there's a, you know, woman all to herself named Keturah.
Do these kids have prison?
So I would if I had to guess, I would say yeah. Like why not? But if you get a bris at 8 days old and everybody in the household was getting brisim at 8 days old from then on, there's nothing noteworthy of that. Yeah. It's noteworthy for Yitzhak only because Yitzhak is gonna create the model for us going forward. And Yishmael is noteworthy because he's 13. And it's going to also create the model, right, going forward. But everybody else, it doesn't really matter. They're just like the Avadim in the house. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so I want to focus in on just one pasuk. Let's take a look at pasuk Chet one more time. Vaygva ve'yamat Avram b'seva tova zaken v'saveya. Avram dies, b'seva tova. What does it mean, b'seva tova? So it's like a good old age. Now it's true, he's 175 years old. We'd all sign up for that. Right? That's a really long life. But we know that it's not even, it's hard to say this with a straight face, but it's not really a full life, because how old was Avram supposed to be? He's supposed to live to be 180. Because all the Avos were supposed to live to be 180. How do we know that? Because Yitzhak lived to be 180. I could see David's, like, his eyes are beginning to eye roll. They're all supposed to live to be 180. Yaakov loses 33 years. Did I do the math right? Yeah. Because he was supposed to be 180, he dies at 147. He loses those because he complained to Paro in 33 words. And God says, fine, you're going to lose 33 years. Abraham should have lived to be 180 also. He dies at 175 because that's when Yaakov and Esav turn 15. And Esav goes off the derech at 15. So he's able to be spared seeing that. Okay. But 175 is still a pretty good amount. We'd all sign up for that. But Zaken v'Saveya seems to be that he lives a full, happy, wonderful, amazing life. So what's the problem with that?
I think your problem is that he was pretty unhappy till he was 100 because he didn't have an heir.
Well, so let's,
and then all the nishyonos that he had to go through.
Right, so let's look at his life. Until he's 100, he goes through the constant hope and the wish that he's going to have a child. So depressing to see that it just doesn't seem to happen for him. So that's the first 100 years of his life. Then what happens after that? Yitzhak is born, and 2 years later, he banishes Yishmael. Or not 2 years later, a few years later. He banishes Yishmael. And then what else happens after that? A short while after, there's Akedas Yitzchak. He thinks he's going to lose it all. And then, at some point after that, whether immediately or a few years later, what happens next? His wife dies. So it's so sad because here's this guy, Zaken v'Saveya, he's supposed to have this amazing life. Everything is so good, and yet it doesn't look that way. It looks like everything that could go wrong does go wrong.
I don't know that Zaken v'Saveya means he led a good life. It means when he died, he was satisfied. It's at his death that he looks back and says, I'm satisfied with what I had, because now in the macro, in the big picture, I can see my life was full.
Okay, so that's a great answer. We'll see that Rabbi Sacks is going to take a little bit of that to answer the question. But what Rabbi Sacks's basic question is, you look at a guy like Avraham and say, like, this is a person that, yeah, you're right, at the very end, when it's all done, he's like, this didn't work. This, you know, it wasn't too bad. But there's so much suffering in his life. And even when Sarah dies, he doesn't have a place to bury her. And despite the fact that they all proclaim that he's a Nesi Elokim, the Nesi Elokim, I mean, that's amazing. But even so, like, it just feels like something's missing. Interestingly, completely side note, Rabbi Sacks took over for Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz, who was the previous chief rabbi of England. And their yard sites are almost, you know, are within a few days of each other. So the Hespedim were on the same parsha. And I believe that Rabbi Sacks's Hesped for Rabbi Jacobowitz, he talks about how everybody calls him what? He was a Nesi Elokim. And so one of the Dayanim who gave a Hesped, it's amazing that there is, here you're talking about a funeral for Rabbi Sacks and there are 30 people there. But he refers to Rabbi Sacks as a Nesi Elokim. That's an amazing thing to be called. I mean, like that, it's not just that your congregation feels you're a good guy, and it's not just that the Jewish community feels you're a good person, but the entire world recognizes you that way. But despite that, Avram still comes up short, has nowhere to bury Sarah. Rabbi Sacks says that there are 7 times that Avram is promised he would get the land, and then Sarah dies, and he realizes, I don't have anything. So let's take a look at the Ramban, because the Ramban gives us a possible explanation. Before I do the Ramban, not that I think my answer is better than the Ramban, far from it, but I always found something, there was a consolation in Pasuk Tet to Avram. Avram dies, and I think one of the parts that probably bothered Avram all his life was, like, I get it that these 6 boys, for whatever reason, and let's say that Avram didn't have them just so that he can get rid of everybody, you know, and make Yishmael feel that he's no different. But these 6 boys were born at a point where I don't think Avram really intended to invest what he invested in his other kids. But he invests so much in Yishmael. And he even says, Lu Yishmael Yechyeh. If only it would be that Yishmael would be the one to succeed me, that would be enough. So that's where we're at with Yishmael. And yet, he's forced to banish him. So, what's the consolation is, Vayikbru oto Yitzchak v'Yishmael, that in the end, who buries Avraham? It's both of his kids. Yitzchak and Yishmael together are willing to bury him. And I think for him, that's a pretty big consolation to have. But the Ramban has a different answer of what possibly Zakein Mesaveya is. Shera'a kol mishalot libo. All the desires of his heart were filled. V'saveya kol tova. And he was full with all its goodness. V'chein usfa yamim. She'sava nafsho b'yamim lo itaveh she'ichadshu bo hayamim. Davar. So he felt that there was nothing lacking. He didn't need anything else. It's the same thing it says by David, which is important to note. David does not live to be 175. David only lives to be 70. And it says by David, he's full of days and wealth and honor. V'hu sipur says the Ramban, the greatness of the tzaddikim is that they don't need any more. they're happy with what they have. Shene'emar b'hem tavat libo natatalo, that they get everything they want. V'lo kamo shene'emar b'shar anashim, and not like everyone else, that we say, oev kesef lo yispa kesef, that if you love money, you're never going to have enough money. So that's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that what it is that he has a certain contentment. It's not that Avram's life is great. Avram's life is not great. There's so many moments in his life where he suffers, and there's so many disappointments in his life. And yet, what he's able to do is he's able to say, but yeah, I fulfilled whatever it was I was put on this earth to do. I feel like I'm good. I have everything I need. That's the Ramban's answer. So now, I want to share with you Rabbi Sachs's answer. So let's take a look at the promises that God gives to Avraham, pretty much when we meet him at the very beginning of Lech Lecha. Vayomer Hashem el Avraham, Lech Lecha mi'artzecha, m'ladcha beit avicha, el aretz asher areka. God says to Avraham, go from your land, from your birthplace, from the house of your father, and go to the unknown land that I will show you. Ve'escha l'goy gadol, I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you. I'll make your name great. And you'll be a bracha. And those that bless you will be blessed. And those that curse you will be cursed. And all the nations of the world will bless themselves through you. That's Abraham's bracha. Basically, in these psukim, God gives him two brachos. There's going to be greatness, and you're going to have real numbers. Well, at a certain point in Avram's life, he has to look at these brachos and say, it doesn't seem like these are happening. And as time goes on, some of them look less and less likely. Certainly the son becomes really unlikely when he hits 86 and he still has no child. And that's when Hagar says, I'm sorry, that's when Sarah says, maybe Hagar would be the way to go. So, but then we go to Perek Yud Zayin. So Perek Yud Zayin, Vayhi Avram ben Tishim Shana v'Teisha Shanim, Avram is 99 years old. Vayera Hashem el Avram, this is the end of Lech Lecha, Brisbane of Sarim. God appears to Avram, Vayomer Elav, Ani Kel Shakai, Italech Lefanai Vayei Tamim. I am God, go before me and be Tamim. Ved Nabriti Bnei Benecha, we're going to make a covenant between me and you. I'm going to make you very, very, very great. Now, if you're Avram at this point in time, you're looking and saying, God, you're going to make me very, very great. I have one kid. That's it. All I have is Yishmael. Avram falls in his face. And God speaks him and says, you're going to be Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations. You're no longer going to be Avram, but instead you'll be Avram. Because you're going to be a great, great nation, or a great amount of nations. It's not one, but Avram will end up being the father of the Jewish people, the father of Christianity, the father of Islam. It's all going to come. That's a lot of people on this planet that can go back to him. You're going to be a lot. You'll be a lot of nations and kings will come from you. And I'm going to make a covenant between me and between you and your children afterwards for generations, between God and your children. It's called Eretz Canaan. And this is like the big piece. The big bracha is you're going to get the land of Canaan. It will be yours, lachuzat olam, forever, v'hayiti lahem leilokim. And you're going to be, and I will be for you a god. Now, anybody that's ever gone to visit Chevron, and like all the Chevron fund people, and I'm sporting, because when you work in a school, it's like not weird to be walking around with a bracelet like this, right? Through the weekend, right? I love Chevron, right? Why do they send these things out? What's the purpose of it, right? Why do they, there's more to Chevron than just the fact that it's a burial plot. But the kiyum of Avraham's bracha, Right? The way we see it happen, it's actualized when he buys Maris and Machpelah. Because by burying him, by being buried there, and then by subsequently giving Yitzchak the next spot, and then Yaakov there, and Yaakov's children are all Bnei Yisrael, that's the claim. That like God, again, it's not going to hold weight necessarily in the world of politics, but it's going to hold weight in our mind and in the religious world to say, if God promised us the land, and it was promised to Avraham, and then Avraham actualizes it by buying Maris HaMachpelah, and all the Avos and Imahos were buried there, therefore it's ours. And that's what says that this covenant still exists to this day. That's what they say. God says, listen, I'm going to tell you what it's going to take to do it. If you want to do it, if you want to make sure that this bris continues, you have to get a bris milah. That's what it's going to take to ensure that all these years later, you're still going to be the Jewish people. God gives Avram three brachos: greatness, numbers, and the land. So now I want to go back to the beginning of this week's parsha. Because when we start this week's parsha, we see that Avram Avinu is in a really bad spot. Sarah's dead. He's 137 years old. Much of his life is gone. Certainly, we see right after that, at 137, it says, Avraham Zakein Baba Yamim, Perachav Dalet Pasuk Aleph. Avraham was old, and he was not only old like in terms of like numerically, but he was also old in terms of his strength. Like it was gone. So Avram is at the end of his rope, even though he's still going to live another bunch of years. And let's take a look at where Avram is at 137. Sarah lives to be 100 years old, 20 years old, and 7 years old. Shnei chayei Sarah. These are the years of Sarah's life. Sarah dies in Kiryat Arba, which is Chevron, Be'eretz Kenan. Avraham comes to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. Avraham, by the way, just a quick note. Veliv kota, dafka does not make the letters smaller, so you always get it the way it is. But the chaf of veliv kota is small, right? So why is that? So I think it's the Balaturim that says veliv kota is small because he didn't cry fully. She had a whole long life. But I would ask the question, which I won't answer, but I think it's something to think about, is it possible that the reason why he's crying is because his relationship with Sarah is somewhat complicated, and he's crying about the complicated dynamic in his relationship, and perhaps the fact that he never really fully was able to reconcile that. Something to think about. You have to really look back to Lech Lecha and Vayera, but it's not so simple. Even though Sarah and Avraham have the best of the relationships of the Avos and Imahos at first glance, it's not so simple that that's the case. Avram gets up from in front of his mate, and he speaks to the Bnei Chait saying, "Ger v'toshav anochi machem, I am a ger v'toshav." Ger v'toshav. A ger is someone who doesn't really live there. It just comes from the word like gar, to live, but it's not really your home. You're, I don't want to say guest, but you're like, you're not really. You're, I don't know, how would you define that even? A
permanent resident?
Permanent resident. Yeah, could be.
Passing through.
So, yeah, I guess it's like there's a certain transient level. Like you, it's almost, I guess it would be like this. Like,
got a worker visa.
Yeah, like, you know, someone that comes from Israel, lives in America, but like never becomes a citizen here. You're like, you live here. You might even pay taxes here, but like, this is not home, but he's also a toshav. Toshav is like, I live here, yoshev. I have like roots here. Which one is he? So he says, ger v'toshav anochi machem. He's lived in the land since he's 75 years old. It's a lot of years to live somewhere. Imagine living somewhere for that many years and you're like, I don't really feel like I'm a member yet. if after 60 plus years you're not a member in a shul or you don't feel like you're a member in a shul, it's probably not going to happen. I'm begging you, give me an achuzat kever amongst you, so I could bury my dead from in front of me. Avram, come on, you're an Nesilu Kim. You could bury your dead anywhere you want. Pick the grave, it's yours. You can come into any of the cemeteries of the people of Chait. Pick any plot you want. Avram gets up and he bows down to the people. I think he is legitimately, genuinely touched by the friendship that they show. The fact that they're like, listen, you're one of us, Avram. You are a member. You've paid your dues. And you could have any place amongst us. That is where we'll stop in terms of the Pesukim. But Avraham realizes at this point in time, when he says those words, Ger v'toshav, he recognizes that after 60-something years in the land, after 137 years of living, he goes back to the Pesukim of Lech Lecha. And he says, God, you promised me what? Greatness. Okay, maybe I got that. They do think I'm a nice guy. Numbers? Oh, my family consists of now Yitzchak, Yishmael, maybe a few grandchildren. That's where he's at. And worst of all, he says, but God, what about the third bracha? What about the land? I don't even have 6 feet. Don't even have that. God, how could it be? So what he does is he realizes, and this is one of the hespedim that someone gave at Rabbi Sachs. It's amazing. They said that when he actually started as a rabbi, he was a terrible speaker. It's hard to imagine. Because he spoke like he thought in such brilliant words. Like, think Rev Soloveitchik. So what ended up happening was most of the people were like, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know any of those words. And what Rabbi Sachs slowly did was that he found a way to speak not only to the people, but there's always a line in his writings or his speeches that like sticks with you. His line here in Judaism's life-changing ideas, where he discusses the message of Chayei Sarah, is he says he decides not to wait for God anymore, but it's time for him to act. He recognizes that if I wait for God to take care of me, if I wait for God to give me the land, if I wait for God to give me lots of children, it's not going to happen. And so what he does is he buys the land and he spends a fortune on it. And then he marries off Yitzchak, also at great expense and great length. And then he has those other children. Then he looks back and says, wait, I did it. I have greatness. I have numbers and I have land. He survives and thrives. Because what Avram does is Avram never looks back and says, I have a bad life. There's so many things wrong. But what Avram does is he always looks to the future. And he says, look at the opportunities I have. And so finally at 137, he realizes it's time to act because I'm getting old. And if I don't act now, I might never have a chance for that. Rabbi Sachs asks, how did the people after the Holocaust have the strength to go on? And so it's interesting because for most of us, we're the, I don't know what generation you call it officially, if we're, I guess we're the third generation, right? Our grandparents were by and large the survivors. So we didn't have necessarily the opportunity to see the evolution of survivor and those first 20, 30 years where they didn't say anything. So I said, why is it that so many survivors not only thrived and made real successful things for themselves, including family, land, fortunes, and everything. He says, because what they did when they first survived was they didn't think about the past. They put the past in a dark place and just held on to it for a long time. And in the meantime, what they did was they said, we got to forge forward and make sure that the future is safe. And often it was only when their children were finally settled, and sometimes only when they had grandchildren, and they were able to look and say, Higati, I made it. Everything is good. At that point in time, then, when they knew that their future was secure, they were able to look backwards. Avram Avinu was in the same boat. Avram Avinu understood that he could look at his life and see there were so many bad things that happened to him, so many times along the way. But Avram Avinu refused. He refused to focus on the past until he had secured the future. And because of that, when he finally reaches the day of his death, when Avram is on his deathbed and he looks around, he's able to say, yes, it is true that I suffered. It is true that all these things happened to me. But I also look and see, look at the future. Look how much is going to happen after I pass on. Look how much I've left for the next generation. And that is how Avram is able to see B'seva Tova Zakein. He's able to look and see the positivity. How? Because Avram understood that as long as you look at the future, and you realize all the opportunities that are out there, and a person has so many chances to be successful. So I just want to, we have like 10 seconds left. I just want to once again thank everyone for being part of the Chabura, especially the last 7 months or so have been somewhat tumultuous, but we have been able to continue by looking forward to the future, by learning on Zoom, GoMeeting, the tent, and so many other places. But Baruch Hashem, it's a real zchus, and Emir Tz Hashem will have a chance to learn together for many, many more years to come.